Turning your New Testaments to 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6, and put a finger or a piece of paper on Ecclesiastes chapter 5, Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Drew Bean, well done, brother. Very well done. You know, he mentioned his mother. She's a tribute to all mothers. She raised a whole bunch of boys, and all of them are faithful to the Lord. Wonderful servants in the kingdom. And I'll tell you, I've often told this to Drew, you know, you might have missed your calling. What a powerful presentation in such a short amount of time. Thank you, sir. Well, American Idols. I want to preface my sermon this morning by telling you that I have an issue, as I think many of us do, with idols in our lives. Sometimes I think we serve things other than Jehovah our God. And I believe that I'm guilty of that. And I believe that there are others in our society that are guilty of that. And I'll try to explain why as we go along. As we go along in our sermon, I fight materialism. And I struggle to be content. And I think there's many of us who fall into that same category. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. But godliness with contentment is great gain. That's what the Apostle Paul said to the evangelist Timothy. He says, but godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction and dismay and despair. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. I'm studying the Old Testament right now. I'm in the book of Deuteronomy teaching my class back there. And man alive, have I ever learned a lot in the book of Deuteronomy. Three sermons. Two that cap the book, one big one in the middle. And I've learned a lot about the way Jehovah and his character, who he is, feels about being content. How he feels about idolatry, things that we serve other than him. The book of Exodus, chapter 20, Jehovah says this. He says, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol. And what's interesting here is it's not particular idols. He says, an idol in the form of anything. In ancient times, and even in some primitive cultures today, people worshiped statues, and they worshiped birds and animals, different kinds of beasts, and what they considered to be deities. And in America, we don't do that today, really. I think it's because we're far too sophisticated to do that. But we do have our own idols that we serve. And they often receive our love. And they receive our attention. And they receive our devotion. And what we do is we put those things before God. And when we do that, they become our idols. Don't you see? So as I was sitting here thinking about idolatry, I thought to myself, so Steve, what is an idol? How would you explain that today? Well, it's anything you worship other than worshiping Jehovah, our God and Father. Or anything you serve rather than serving our God. It can be a possession of any kind. It can be a relationship. Some kind of relationship that you put in front of God. It can be an attitude. It can be an ideology. Anything that gets in front of Jehovah our God. If it takes God's place, it becomes an idol. Materialism. We'll talk about that. The pursuit of pleasure. Addiction to work and success and power, money. And that attitude that basically can be described as me, me, me. Self-centeredness. That is an idol. But this morning I want to concentrate on our attitude towards money and materialism. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that for my sake. Does anyone know the most misquoted verse in the New Testament? Could you just think of one? I'm sure there's several. But can you think of one that just stands out? That's misquoted. You've probably heard this expression, money is the root of all evil. Money is the root of all evil. I hear it all the time. Well, I don't believe that money is the root of all evil. Because that's not what the scriptures say. What do the scriptures say? For the love of money is at the root of all kinds of evil, okay? It is the love of money that's wrong. And we need to understand that money in and of itself is not bad. Money is a good thing. You can do a whole lot of great things with money, and the more money you have, the more good stuff you can do. Money becomes a problem when we stop using it to do good. It becomes a problem when we worship it, when we serve it, when we spend all of our time working for it to the demise of our own children and our own spouse and everybody else. It becomes a problem when we give it the highest priority in our lives. I'm not just talking about green pieces of paper, ladies and gentlemen. That's not what I'm talking about. Not only that, I'm referring to things that money can buy. I know about that. It plagues me from time to time. I'm talking about the passion for possessions. It was time for Muffy to get a new phone, the iPhone 12. I think I've said this before from the pulpit, but I'm a gadget guy, and I don't even know how to use them. I just like them. And I had told myself, you know, I got the iPhone 10. I don't need the iPhone 12. Muffy really needed a phone, and plus it's got a great capacity to take pictures. And Muffy needs that so she can take pictures with the thing. It was fantastic when we were at Zion National Park. Thomas took a picture and with that iPhone 12, and we blew that thing up. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's like a professional photographer took the thing. And so I said, man alive, Muffy's got to have that, and it's time for her to have a phone. I don't need an iPhone 12. I've got the 10. I'm going to be just fine. She got that phone, and I couldn't stand it. I had to have it. I could taste it. I got a great deal from Apple, too, man. I got to tell you. It was a fantastic deal from Apple, and just so I would make myself better, feel better, I called Verizon instead. I wanted to see what kind of deal they'd give, and you know what? I got a better deal from them, and I bought it. But I didn't want to wait 3 days for it. I told the lady, where in Houston, Texas, do you have one of these close to my house? I want it today. I've got the money. Maybe some of you know what I mean. Passion for stuff. Some people don't care how much money they have in the bank, as long as they've got a house full of stuff, new stuff. Latest stuff. They don't mind going into debt. There are people all over this country that are in debt to the hilt. They think nothing of spending money that will require them to pay it back over years because they don't have the capability to do it. That kind of an attitude is just as destructive as stockpiling cash. Don't you see? Whenever the accumulation of money or things becomes a top priority in your life, you are headed for a heartache every last time. I have learned this in my life. America's cultural mindset, based on what I can see, ladies and gentlemen, is that we love stuff. We like stuff. We love dollars. We love having a lot of dollars. We love houses, big houses that are full of all kinds of stuff that we can't even and don't have time to even use. I've got all kinds of woodworking equipment in my garage. I got it all because I thought it was cool. And I've gotten out there and tried to use the stuff, but I got too much going on. I don't have time to go out there and do the woodworking, but I had to have it. We love cars. We love fancy cars. We like a lot of cars. We love swimming pools and hot tubs. We like the flowers around them and the rocks that you can get to build and all of the water shooting all over the place and all of that kind of thing. We like that. We like affluence. It's the American dream, isn't it? And if we don't have those things ourselves, we love to see them on TV, right? What was the name of that show, The Rich and Famous? Man, that was a very popular show. You want to know why? Because you could sit there and you could watch that thing and dream about having that stuff. Brethren, what's the problem with materialism? Let's talk about it. Look, let's face the fact. We are a materialistic culture. And if we don't hold our materialistic attitudes in check, we're going to experience all kinds of problems. A whole bunch of problems. Now, there's another word that can be substituted for materialism. And it's a word that we really don't like very much. We don't like to talk about it. You know what that word is? Greed. We don't like that word, greed. That's a nasty sounding word, isn't it? Greed. In Ecclesiastes, King Solomon, the wealthiest and wisest man in the world that's ever lived, the Bible points out with that book, what a greedy, materialistic mindset leads to. And I've been studying that thing because I'm trying to learn how to act. Tell you what the problem with materialism is. You never have enough. You never have enough. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, whoever loves money never has money enough. You don't ever have enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. We all know intellectually that money can't buy love or happiness. What? Any folks from the 60s here? Can't buy me love. The Beatles, right? That's what that song was about. Money can't buy love. Money can't buy happiness. That's not what where it comes from. But many of us think that if we could get our hands on enough money, we would be the exception to that rule. It would be different for us. We think that money might not buy happiness for everyone else, but we are convinced that money could buy happiness for us. Most of us think, if I just had $1 million. But honestly, you think about it in your own mind. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'm going to stick my hand up. How many of you said, if I just had $1 million, I'd find a way to be happy? Man alive, I wouldn't have to work anymore. That'd make me happy, right? In fact, most of us believe a lie that's far more dangerous than that. We think if I just had a little bit more than I have right now, I'd be happy. Just a little bit more. Just 20% more. Man alive, if I just had 20%, my life would be great. In Orange County, Southern California, that's one of the most affluent counties in America. A few years ago, residents of that community were surveyed with a question. You know what the question was? What do you need most? This is Orange County, California. They're the richest people on the face of the United States planet. Okay? The continent, sorry. What do you need most? The number one answer was, what do you think? I need more money. I need more money. This is true, folks. And if we were to ask this question in our community, wherever that might be, I think the answer would likely be pretty close to the same. Yet, when we compare our standard of living to much of the rest of the world, and I've been a few places in the world, when you compare it, our standard of living, we have comforts and luxuries that those folks could never dream of. They look at us like we are kings and queens and wealthy. But in our own eyes, I still need a little more. I just need a little more. Man, life, if I just work a little bit harder, if I just impress the boss a little bit, if I could just reach that man, if I could reach that management level, I would have this much more. Man, dude, that would make it for me. That's what materialism does to you. Never have enough. Materialism. I'll tell you what the problem is. You make really bad, bad, bad decisions. There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun, Solomon says. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. That passage struck me, I'll tell you. How many of you have invested money? I hope you are investing money for your retirement, your 401k. But how many of you have invested money and lost money? You can't avoid it. That's part of the process. It's fleeting, okay? However, if we're honest, we would have to admit that many times those shaky investments were motivated by greed. Have you ever noticed that con men don't promise you a 12% return on your money? They promise you a 300% return on your money in 3 months. That's what a con artist on the telephone or on the computer will try to talk you into. And that's how they get takers, I'll tell you. And that's why somebody came up with the saying, a fool and his money are soon parted. Greed doesn't just cause you to make bad investment decisions. It causes you to make bad spending decisions, too. It causes you to want things you shouldn't have, things you don't need, more stuff. You know, I'm reminded here again of this passage in 1 Timothy chapter 6. We've talked about, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and into a snare. Look at the last part of this. Into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Now, if you believe the fact that the New Testament is inspired word of God, then you got to take a look at that and you got to let that sink in. Absorb some of that, okay? Think about that. Point number three. Materialism causes you to think only of yourself. Greed, you see, in its ugliest form, in its nastiest form, causes us to think only of ourselves with no thought of those in the world all around us. Now, what did Solomon say? If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, let me preface this by saying this is Solomon, the king, okay? If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, do not be amazed at the matter, for the high official is watched by a higher, and there are yet higher ones over them. But this is gain for a land in every way, a king committed to cultivated fields. I think that Solomon loved irony, okay? I really do, and I mean that the more that I study the words of Solomon, those words given by God to Solomon, I think that he was very well aware of how bureaucracies can bring oppression, okay? I think he understood that. But even with corrupt bureaucracy, everyone depends upon what comes from the farmer's field. Don't you see? And while the peasant is protected by the king as the executor of the law, the king himself is dependent on the peasant, the fruit of the laborer's toil. The richest man that's ever lived, he wouldn't eat without the peasant. And these words are in sharp contrast, I believe, to the Apostle John in 1 John, where it says, but if anyone has, and I put in there money, some of your translations may say money, but if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? How can that be? Do you see the contrast? Materialism causes you to experience a lot of pain, a whole bunch of pain. The rich are always worrying and seldom get a good night's sleep. Sweet is the sleep, I think another translation, something like this. Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. The older you get, young folks, I'm going to tell you, what you eat at night what you eat and drink at night has a lot to do with how much sleep you're going to get. All right, I'm telling you, man. Because when you get to be in your 60s, you got to watch what you eat about 3 or 4 hours before you go to bed. Or man, you're going to have stomach problems, and if you're a man, you're going to have to get up and go to the bathroom about 18 times. You know, I'm telling you, a full stomach can be a real problem. But the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. Why is it that the rich are always worrying? Can you explain that to me? I've been trying to figure that out. All they want is money. And the more money they get, the more they worry. Because too often the rich, you see, they're leveraged to the hilt. That's the way it is. It's a simple fact that the more money you make, the more likely you're to live beyond your means. That's the problem that a lot of young professionals get into real quick. They live beyond their means. Even living at the extent of your means is stressful. It's problematic, especially when you put yourself in debt. I'm going to go back to the passage again, to this part that says, some people craving money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs or sorrows. Your translation may say pangs. I learned a long time ago that no possession in the world can bring enough pleasure to offset the pain of being in debt. Well, that is if you ever intend to pay it back. A lot of folks today are in debt, don't care a thing about paying it back. They're trying to think of ways to get out of it, to default. Now let me ask you, ladies and gentlemen, is that right? Should we default on debt that we accumulated because of the things we bought or we put on credit? Whose fault is that? I want to tell you, no car is slick enough. It's not cool enough. It's not fast enough. No stereo system is loud enough. No restaurant is fancy enough. No vacation package is relaxing enough to compensate for the misery of owing money, the misery of being in debt. Now, for most people, debt, like I said, just an annoying inconvenience. But for some people, debt has turned their lives into an absolute nightmare. Chances are that this would apply to someone, maybe here, or those that you might know. I think the principle is clear. When you buy something, you pay for it. Are we still paying for things today that wore out or broke down a long time ago? How many of you are upside down in a car you shouldn't have bought to begin with? For some people, every dollar they earn today will not go toward what they'll need tomorrow or even what they need today. Every dollar they earn today goes to pay for the things they indulged themselves with a long time ago. You see, this is the stuff that folks don't want to talk about. This is the thing that we don't want to have to deal with, ladies and gentlemen, but we live in an affluent society. We live in a rich world. And our eyes are oftentimes bigger than our pocketbook. And we get ourselves into all kinds of trouble. Financial bondage is what I call it. Now, I'm not saying this because I want you to feel guilty. That's not the point of this. I'm not looking to make you sick to your stomach about whatever situation you might be in. I'm saying this because I want you to know that I understand the nightmare of financial bondage. I get it. I know what that feels like. Muffy's going to kill me for this. When we were first married, I didn't have a nickel. I mean, I had a good job, but weddings cost a lot and rings cost a lot, and I didn't spend my money very wisely or invest it the way I should have earlier on when I got out of college. And so we were living in this little place, and I was working and just trying to pay the rent, you know, and everything. And so mother, I love my mother to death, but mom, if you're watching this, no offense, okay, but I love mom to death, but it's like daddy used to say, she just wrote the checks and I backed them up. Mama knew how to write checks, you know. So anyway, mom and Muffy got together and they went out to shop, and of course, Mom wanted her to buy this and wanted her to buy that and wanted her to buy this. Muffy knew we didn't have the money, and yet Muffy went ahead and bought it. And it's plagued her ever since. In fact, I think she got it home, then turned around and went right back and gave it back to them and said, "Give me my money back, okay, because we can't afford this." Muffy's one of the most frugal people I've ever met in my life. And she's very careful with our money, so I don't want to leave you with the wrong impression, okay? But what's the point? The point is that we bought something we couldn't afford because we or somebody else thought we had to have it. But there's a way out. This is the problem with materialism. At best, it sidetracks us. At worst, it destroys us. It's not that money is bad. It's that we don't use our money oftentimes correctly, and it wreaks havoc in our lives. It's no different than food. Okay, that's the way I see it. It's no different than food. Food isn't bad, but when we misuse it, we're going to have health issues. Okay? We're going to have problems, and when we misuse money, it causes all kinds of problems. It'll cause emotional problems. It'll cause marital problems and stress-related problems. How is it that we destroy this idol? How do we destroy it? Through mastering the spiritual power of contentment. By being content. The key to destroying the idol of greed or the idol of materialism is to experience the spiritual power of contentment. Now, there are three ways as I see it. Number one, and before we go to those three ways, I just want you to ask yourself the question, can I live without more? Can I live with less? Now, let's go back to the points that we made before. Materialism causes what kind of issue? You never have enough, you make bad decisions, you think only of yourself, and you then experience intense pain. Okay? So, how is it? How do we practice contentment? First of all, you decide to be content. You decide. You have made your mind up because contentment is a choice, ladies and gentlemen. It's not a feeling that comes over you. That's not what contentment is. It's a decision that you make. And I encourage you to spend time with God this week and say, God, if this is it, if this is as much as I'm going to have, if this is as far as I'm going to get in my career, if this is the most money I'm going to make, I accept that. I'm fine with that. Because guess what? It's God that gives it to you anyway. Please understand that, ladies and gentlemen. It's God that, I don't care how much you work. He gave you your brain, all right? I don't care how much labor capabilities you have and how strong you are. He gave you your body. He owns the land. Go back to Deuteronomy and read about it. It's His. He gives it to us. Spend time with God. God, I won't be bitter because others have more. I won't be bitter because I can't have this car. I won't be bitter because I can't have the iPhone 12. I didn't need that iPhone 12. I'll be thankful for all that you've given me. I'll be thankful for all of that. You got to make the choice to be content. Look here what Paul says, Philippians chapter 4. He says, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. He knows. Do you know? What is the secret? Do you know what the secret is? He tells us. I can do all things through Him who gives me strength. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Once you've decided to be content, you'll find that you can thrive in any situation that you're in, that comes your way. And what's the key? Choosing to be satisfied with the things that are in your life. Choosing that. Choosing contentment. Rather than being dissatisfied that these things, this stuff, is not in your life. Now look, there's a second thing that I think. Just seek simple ways to enjoy life. It took me a way to... By simpler, I mean, it took me a while to figure this. I mean cheaper. Okay, find cheaper ways. There was a time when I thought an enjoyable evening out had to cost money. It had to cost a lot of money. You know, I had to go to La Griglia every time I wanted to take somebody out and spend $150. That's the only way you could have fun, right? That's my favorite restaurant in Houston. I love that restaurant. That restaurant, your appetizers are pizza, man. They bring out pizza as an appetizer. Can you imagine that? La Griglia, way too much money. I thought you had to go to movies. Let me tell you, it's about 10 or 12 bucks just for one of you to get in a movie. I mean, you're going to burn $25 just going to watch the movie, and half the time the movies aren't worth watching. Going to a restaurant, like I said, let me tell you what, you can drop $100, boom, just like that. Going to a concert, going to the ball game, and on, it doesn't have to be that way. I encourage you to set aside one day each week to have fun without spending any money. Go to the park. If you want to find some parks, I got to tell you, up in the northwest where I live, up there, I didn't even realize this, but they've got a bunch of really nice parks right there by that creek that goes through there. You know, and I got to looking at that. One day we went out and hiked a little bit, and I said, I cannot believe I am in Houston, Texas. Go to the park. Invite your friends over to play a game. I have learned how to do that recently. You know what? There's a whole bunch of games. You can have a whole lot of fun. You don't even have to spend any money for food. You can just pull out what you have in the refrigerator. Okay, you can do that, ladies and gentlemen, or what you can do is ask them to bring drinks, okay? Bring a salad, you know, over to the party and play a game. Enjoy that. Spend the evening playing catch with your children. I wish I had that time back. You think I would trade the money for that? They're 28 now. They're not much on play and catch. However, they do like Frisbee. Find ways to have fun without spending money. Jesus warned us. I'm going to tell you that. He warned us. Here it is. Beware. Don't be greedy for what you don't have. Real life is not measured by how much we own. Neither is real life measured by how much we spend. Look for simpler ways to enjoy life, ladies and gentlemen. Evaluate what is really important to you. When you go on date night with your wife, I got a suggestion for you, men. When you go on date night, you got to take her to La Griglia, or you got to take her to some restaurant, spend $150 on her. You don't have to do that. Let me tell you what you do, okay? All right, you listening? This is it. I'm 61. I learned this the hard way. Go to the kitchen, and if you have any lunch meat and cheese, and you got some bread up in there, and you've got some chips, and you got an apple or an orange or something, scrounge around in there, because your wife has probably got more junk in there than you know anything about. You go over there, get in that icebox, look at all that, prepare up some sandwiches, get your chips ready, some Coke Zero and some new Dr. Pepper Zero, which, by the way, is very, very good if you haven't tried it. Dr. Pepper Zero Cherry. Put that all together in a picnic basket and tell your wife or your husband, I have a surprise for you, men. You tell her, I got a surprise for you. And you go to the park, lay out the blanket, okay? Put it down there and just say, I wanted to spend some time with you and I made some sandwiches. Let's talk. She'll think she died and went to heaven. It took me 32 years to figure that out. I didn't have to take her anyplace, $150, spend $200. I didn't have to do that. Was it necessary? I'm suggesting that you look for ways to maximize your time together without depleting your bank with all your money. Because you're going to need that for other things like this. You want to know how to practice contentment? Increase your giving. Increase your giving. Yeah, that may sound like advice laden with self-interest, especially here among the brethren. I won't pretend that increased giving won't help. Increased giving will help the church do our job more effectively and get us closer to that building that we desperately need. So no, I'm not going to apologize when I say that we need to give more. We do need to give more. If you got it to give, give it. But what I want you to realize is that the greatest impact your giving will have is going to be on your own life. All right? Being a giver changes you. It changes your priorities. Matthew chapter 6 came to my mind. Wherever your treasure is, there your heart and thoughts will also be. Where is your treasure? Give from your heart. But I want you to understand that your giving shouldn't be limited to money in terms of just what you drop in the offering plate. I encourage you to practice giving every day of your life, even in situations where you don't get credit. And then you're not going to get a statement for the money that you gave, so you can take it off your tax return. For example, you probably know a family member or someone at your work or in the community that may have trouble paying their utility bill, maybe a widow, okay, or somebody needs a car repair, or maybe some clothes for the kids, or maybe dinner at Chipotle. The Spirit helps me with these sermons. Yesterday, Muffy and I went to Chipotle, and I like that place. Actually, it wasn't Chipotle, it was Mod's. We like to go to Mod's and we like to go to Chipotle, but this time we went to Mod's yesterday. And we were standing in line, and there was kind of a long line. There was a young kid with his dad, and then there was a younger couple with a little girl, and then there was this one lady that was right in front of us, and then there was us and some folks behind us. And anyway, we sit there and wait and go through the line and everything, and we got our two pizzas and all. Walked up to the cash register. Muffy's real good when it comes to getting those free pizzas, you know. She's got it on her phone, and you get a free one anyway. We're standing up there. She's trying to get her free pizza. And the guy looks at us, and he says, you don't owe me anything. What? Yeah, somebody paid for your dinner. Who? Well, she said she didn't want me to say. I said, really? He said, yeah, it's the first time it's ever happened to me. He said, I've never experienced anything like it before. The lady just came up and to us, and I said, there was a lady in here, and I looked around. I told Muffy, I said, I don't know anybody in here. I'm looking around. I don't know anyone here, okay? And anyway, a little bit of time left, and they called me, and, you know, you go up to the counter and get your pizzas and everything, and he says, well, I can tell you now. He said, that lady was in front of you in line, and she's gone now. But she just said, I want to. in the quietest way possible, we can see what you can do to help someone and how it makes you feel. You'll be amazed at how becoming a giver changes your heart. It changes your attitude and even your life. And it will change the person or the people you're giving it to. Proverbs. The generation prospers and are satisfied. Those who refresh others will themselves be refreshed. Paul said to Timothy, true religion with contentment is great wealth. Are you guys getting this? Another translation says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. It's great wealth. You want great wealth? That's great wealth. He's saying that when you live in fellowship with Christ and you consistently practice contentment. Now look, I want to be sure you understand, God is not anti-money, all right? That's not what I'm saying. He is anti-greed. He's anti-selfishness. Money is the root of all evil? No. The love of money and the lust for possessions causes us to think only of ourselves. The love of money is at the root of all kinds of evil. Please understand that, ladies and gentlemen. And when you put your desires for money or your desire for possessions before Jehovah our God, it becomes a god in and of itself. It becomes an idol. It's not a good God to serve, let me tell you. It only leads to misery. If you're caught up in materialism, that trap, and you're filled with greed, I will tell you there's a way out. Choose contentment. You got to choose it. You got to want it. Choose contentment, the spiritual power of contentment, and with that you can destroy any materialistic idol, any idol of greed. Thank you very much for letting me discuss these things, which plague me from time to time. I hope that they have benefited you. You've been a great audience, and you've listened well, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is an honor for me. We haven't talked about obeying the gospel of Jesus Christ, but I will tell you that Jesus gave it all. He gave himself. I can't say it better than Drew said it this morning. Now, how is it that we get into fellowship with him? We obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. We believe with all of our heart, after hearing the gospel, that Jesus is Christ. He came to earth to live as a man, God on earth, to give himself so that we could become holy, so that we would have a way to be redeemed. And all we have to do is repent, turn away from evil, turn to good, confess him as Lord and Savior, and be baptized for the remission of sin. Maybe there's someone here that needs to do that this morning. And if you do, we have a baptistry ready to serve you in that way. Maybe there's someone here that needs the prayers of this congregation. Maybe you're caught up in materialism and greed, and maybe you're having other difficulties with finances. We would love to help you. I'd love to talk with you about that. Our brethren will surround you, and they will give to you and help you. Whatever your need or desire this morning, we would ask that you come while we stand and sing. God is calling, the prodigal come.